We live in a day and an age where the American culture is increasingly anti-God, anti-Bible, and America seeks to free itself from the quote-unquote bondage of Christian principles and morals. This is where we live. This is where you work. This is where you live. This is where you play. This is where you study. And as that reality faces you each and every day, the challenges of sorting through the messages, sorting through what is true and what is a lie, becomes an ever increasing battle every day, doesn't it? You can't get away from it if you are in any sense in the world. And you know, we are supposed to be there, aren't we? We're supposed to be there. We're supposed to be in the world, but not like it. Not like the world. Not of the world. As I consider mothers and the reality of where we live and on our day, I realize that the world is inadequate in giving us a well-rounded understanding of what it means to be a mother. It is interesting if you look and see if you do a search online, what does it mean to be a mother? And you'll get all kinds of differing comments and thoughts. And they all are surprisingly very well stated. But what's interesting is they lack one very, very important point. And that is the involvement of God in their lives. The imperative that God be a part of mothering. You know, you may ask yourselves the question, and I ask this as well, what is the measure of a mom? And you know, how do you measure mothering? And boy, you could get into a lot of trouble with this, because you could say, you know, how did your kids turn out? And if we were to say that's the measure of a mom, that would be a tragic, tragic, limited comparison and quality, because our children have a will to choose, don't they? And no matter how you may invest as a mom in the lives of your children and seek to raise them and love them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, some may choose to walk away. And so what is the true measure of a mom? Well, it's not how her children turn out. And although, you know, a child can really say a lot. We know that in Proverbs chapter 31, it says her children rise up and say, call her what? Call her blessed. And so what the children have to say is really important and is very telling, but that's not the true measure of a mom. You know, true measure of a mom is not what her husband says or thinks. Because there are moms that have husbands that do not know God, and so therefore the worldview, and it's different in the home between mom and dad. And also that places upon a lot of authority upon the man and upon the husband to validate his wife, and that can become a very, very difficult burden to carry. The measure of a mom, the true measure of a mom, is not in her appearance, that she appears beautiful or is up with all of the latest trends and fashions. You do see that in our world today, don't you? You see the tendency and the longing for moms to keep up with everything that's going on out there, to keep up with their friends that maybe don't have children yet, or don't have as many, and they just want to keep up. And so they invest so much time and effort into their appearance. But that is not a true measure of a mom. What is it? Is it her homemaking abilities? Is it how well she does in the home and makes the meals and makes sure the home is clean and smells nice and the clothes are washed and the children, husband, fed? No. How about is it her ability to balance working outside the home and mothering within? Well, you get the idea sometimes that, you know, moms, they are working hard and they're doing what they can. And some, I recognize, you work. Others, you don't. But if we were to make this a measure of a mom, it would be sadly limiting as well. So what is the measure of a mom? I would submit to you that the measure of a mom is what God says about you. It is acknowledging that motherhood is designed to be used by God to build a population of worshipers. And that in the end, we all will stand before God. And the true measure of a mom is what God will say. Because we believe that all will stand before God. And the world does not understand this. The world, they ignore the fact that there is a God and that we all will answer to Him. But we as a church and we as Christians here today must always remember we answer to God. We live for an audience of one, to the praise of His glory and for His pleasure. And so, perhaps that is relieving to some, and maybe to others it's a bit sobering. I trust the balance is the case. Oh God, help me to be faithful. Because I know I answer to You. I answer to You. On a side note, it's not just the moms that will stand before God. We all will. We all will. I invite you to turn in your Bibles to the book of Colossians chapter 3. If you were in Sunday school this morning, you've got a little preview of this. But in Colossians chapter 3, I believe we gain some principles that are helpful for keeping our minds where they need to be. I live for God. I live for God. The reality of motherhood is a 24/7 demand. If you have young children, you know that very well, that the children will wake up in the middle of the night. Perhaps they are sick and they need your constant attention. As your children grow older, they need to go places, they get jobs, they need transportation, they can't drive yet, they don't have a car, and a list goes on, and the pressures just mount as you try in your best effort to keep things ordered. God understands and knows the busyness and the challenges of our lives, and my intent today is not to instruct you on how to handle all of those things. But I believe from this passage that God is going to lift up your gaze, families, from the things that be of this world and setting your affections that be above on things that are above. And perhaps some of the questions that will reverberate through your mind as a result of today is are we doing things in our family that exalt God first, Christ first, in our home? The way we use our time, because we only have 24 hours in a day, does it show that God is first, that we live for Christ? Are we reacting to the pressures that the world places upon us? Or are we choosing where to go and what to do based on what God lays upon our heart? The world can fill a schedule, and it so often does. Our schools, whether you homeschool, public school, Christian school, it fills the schedule. The demands of politics, the demands of work, they fill the schedule. And so these principles are so very, very important. So Colossians chapter 3. Verse 1, we read, "If you then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sits on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. For you are dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall you also appear with him in glory." Principle number one, as we consider the importance of setting our affections on things above, is recognizing that Christ will come and we don't know when. That Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall you also appear with him in glory. The very fact that Jesus Christ shall appear speaks of the resurrection, speaks of his life. And as you and I think about life here and now, let us delight in the reality that Christ is coming again and we shall see him. He's going to appear and we will be like him. And as we think about setting our affections on things above, this is most certainly not something you're going to get from the world. Because the world is anti-God and anti-supernatural. In other words, the miraculous resurrection is something they doubt and do not believe. And so that Jesus Christ is coming again is not something in their vocabulary. But someday they will be face to face with him. And the reality is they will wail when they see him. But setting your affections on things above, remember, Christ is coming again. So in the onslaught of the day's activities, and as you are drugged down as the baby continues to cry, remember that this life is a temporary one. And then one day you will be with the Lord and eternity, and you will see him face to face. Christ is our life. He is coming again. In verse 5, we read this principle, "Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth." Notice upon the earth. That word mortify literally means to kill, to put to death, to render useless, of none effect. Mortify your members which are upon the earth. And then he gives a list. Fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Did you see this list? As we contemplate and think about the importance of setting our affections on things above, make sure that you deal seriously with the things of the world, the principles of the world. I know that it is very easy to put any one of these things before our eyes at any hour of the day. These kinds of things that we read in this list can bring a temporary satisfaction. It could be a distraction from the busyness of the day. It could be a fantasy in your mind of something that's not taking place in your home. But these things are killing you. And so mortify, you kill them, for you live in Christ. Paul says these things are idolatry. What is idolatry? Idolatry is the worship of things other than God. Putting things before God. Setting on the throne of your heart a personal secret relationship that nobody else knows about, but it's comforting and fun. Or your own time with a certain whatever, TV show, whatever it is. And you know it's not feeding you truth, but at least it's mental relaxation. And so setting your affections on things above, understanding motherhood from God's perspective means, hey, Christ is coming again. You'll be with Him someday. Start preparing now. And deal seriously with those sinful things of this world that seek to creep in. You know what 1 Peter says? The devil walketh about as a what? Roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. And the Bible tells us this. And so, mothers, all of us, let's consider seriously what we're doing in our lives, how we're using the members of our body. In verse 6, we read, "For the sake, for which things' sake, the wrath of God comes on the children of disobedience." You've got to realize something. God's wrath comes upon the people of disobedience, those people that do not know God, that live apart from Him and live in these things. They experience God's wrath. You might say, "Well, it doesn't look like it." Or you know, I can't see that. Well, you know what? We might not necessarily see God's wrath immediately, but what does the Bible say? There is coming a day when God's wrath is definite, when there is going to be a clear line drawn, and you are either on the victory side or you are subject to His wrath. And so as you seek to be a godly mom, and setting your affections on things above, remember Christ, He's going to appear. And you answer to Him. And remember, mortify the members of your body. Deal seriously with idolatry. Verse 7, "In the which you also walked some time when you lived in them." Now that short phrase should tell you, it should give you a great reason to rejoice. Why? "In the which you also walked some time when you lived in them." It means that it was true for you, but not anymore. And dear Christian, this is a wonderful joy that we have to be able to look back and say, "That's what I used to be. That's where I used to be. That's how I used to think. That's how I used to fill my time." but not anymore. Because what's verse 8? But now you also put off all of these: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. Lie not one to another, seeing that you've put off the old man with his deeds and have put on the new, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him that created him. See, this is something the world does not know. The world is stuck in sin. And they do not have this renewing option. But you, as a believer, have this wonderful privilege of being renewed in the spirit of your mind, of being able to put off the old man and the things of the flesh, and to put on the new man. Notice that it says, verse 10, you've put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him that created him. The sad reality when the world rejects creation, that God is the creator, when they reject that, they're rejecting this very principle that God desires to conform us to the image of Christ, our creator. And you, as a Christian here today, this is what God is seeking to do in your life: conform you to the image of his Son. And so as you seek to set your affections on things above, remember, God even now is renewing your mind to conform you to the image of his Son, to make you more and more like him. You see, that as we walk through all of this, the attention is continually drawn to Christ. Christ, he's coming. Christ should be sitting on the throne. We worship him, not these other things. Christ is the one who we are to be like, conformed to his image. Verse 11, for where there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcision nor uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, bond nor free, but Christ is all in all. And here you are today. Here we are today. And we may be struggling with our identity or struggling with the roles that God has given to us. Whether we're excited about them, but hey, they're hard. And this walking in this world is difficult and not easy. How much are you making of Christ in your life? Are you making much of him? When we make much of Christ, notice what happens. Verse 12, put on therefore as the elect of God, holy and beloved.